Hey everyone, Kevin Rose here. Welcome to Proof, a podcast dedicated to the NFT ecosystem. Here we interview artists and builders shaping the NFT space with a focus on high quality projects. Now, the episode you're listening to now was actually first released on my other podcast, Modern Finance, but as we decided to kick off this show, we wanted to re-release my previous NFT episodes here so that this feed represents all of the NFT content that I've created. Now, going forward, the Modern Finance podcast will have a focus on finance, and this Proof podcast will have all of the NFT content. If you're a fan of all things blockchain, you'll want to subscribe to both shows. So with that, enjoy the show. Today's guest is artist Mike Winkelman, better known as Beeple. Now, Beeple, I'm sure you've heard of him by now, but he's by far and away the biggest artist in the NFT game. His recent NFT collage sold at Christie's for $69.3 million. And by the way, that was all paid for using the cryptocurrency Ethereum. In this episode, we talk about Beeple's journey as an artist, the first time he ever heard of NFTs, how he uses both physical displays combined with NFTs. We cover programmable NFTs and how they could morph over time, other artists that he respects in the space, and a whole lot more. Now, Beeple's art is all over the place, meaning that some of it's very humorous, some of it's weird, some of it's political, and even some of it is slightly pornographic material. So just listener beware, at times we can get a little bit graphic in this episode. But that said, he's a really funny guy, doesn't take himself too seriously. I think you're really going to enjoy it. We had a fun conversation. So with that, here's Beeple.
Kevin Rose and his guests are not registered investment advisors. All opinions are Kevin's and his guests alone. Nothing discussed today should be relied upon for investment decisions, nor is it investment advice. This show is solely for information and entertainment purposes only. Please work directly with an investment professional.
So thanks for doing the show.
Yeah, dude, thanks for having me on. Super, like, freaking pumped to chat here. And, like, you know, obviously I've known you for, like, super, super long time. So definitely really excited to, like...
Oh, same. So where are you based, actually?
Well, I am in Charleston, South Carolina. I'm originally from Wisconsin, a small town in Wisconsin. And we've been here about 3 years. My brother used to work at Boeing out here in Charleston. And that's what kind of, like, brought us out. It's sort of like, okay, what the fuck are we doing in Wisconsin? Like,
yeah, my dad grew up in Bondiwell.
Oh, really? Where? That's, yeah. That sounds very familiar. That's in Wisconsin?
It wasn't that far outside of Green Bay.
Oh, really? Yeah, okay, that's like literally right where I was. That sounds super familiar. That's funny that I'm like, don't know where that is. Because I lived in, before I moved from here, I lived in Appleton.
Do you know Appleton?
Yeah, I lived in Appleton.
Okay, cool. I still have family there.
That's crazy. That's funny. Yeah, we're going there actually literally tomorrow, like flying into fucking Appleton, like literally tomorrow.
It's funny. One of your early drawings as I was going through it, I was like, oh, he drew Brett Favre.
Yeah.
I was like, oh shit. Was he a Packers fan? Because like the caption was like, I can't believe I drew this or something like that.
I was not, at that time, I do not believe I was a Packers fan. It was just like, why am I drawing this? This is so stupid. Awesome. At that point, I'm pretty sure I hated sports. Like, absolutely. Now I actually made peace with sports. I came to the realization that sports and art are actually very similar.
In what way?
Well, they're both these like completely like subjective actions. Like you're literally trying to like move this piece of like a pig's skin, like right, formed into a ball across this imaginary line. Yeah. Like it's so just like fucking fantasy made up when you like strip it down to what it is. And these just ridiculous, just made up rules. Well, you get to kick it 2 times. Well, why not 6 times? Why not 40 times? And then right, you get an arbitrary number of points. Like the whole thing is just this magical made up thing. And like, honestly, that's like literally exactly what art is. Like, it's just this like magical made up thing where it's like, I'm just going to paint this on this thing. Why? I don't, it doesn't, because people like it. And honestly, at the end of the day, it's like, people enjoy both of them. They inspire people. They make a lot of fucking like jobs and money. And so yeah, it's like, they're actually both these just like purely just ridiculous abstract things that people just do.
Yeah, like the rotten banana at Basel that sold for so much. Like,
yeah, they're just like definitely just like completely subjective things that make people sort of like think and talk and like, I don't know, create a lot of interesting things and provide a lot of value to a lot of people. So then I guess I can kind of
make. So you study computer science though, right?
Yeah, I went to school for computer science and like halfway through realized that it was like, okay, I am. Or programming is just boring as shit. Because to be a programmer, you have to be, to me, you have to be a troubleshooter. You have to be able to, like, that's the part I did not like.
Right? Yeah.
It's like sitting at a piece of code.
Like the debugging shit.
The debugging shit. Oh, I forgot a fucking semicolon. Okay. So there's the afternoon. There's I found a semicolon. Yippee-doo. Like, that does not bring me joy. It was just like,
Yeah.
I'm trying to find a semicolon. Like, that's the part I did not.
So when you first started doing these initial drawings, because they were that, you weren't really actually working in any digital tools at that point.
That's not true, actually. So I started doing digital art, like, well before that. I started right in college in 1999. I'm 39. So right in 1999, right when I got to college, I started making digital art, like, shit with webcams, like shit with, like, you know, websites, early fucking, like, you know, this is pre-web 2.0.
So that was Photoshop 4, probably, right?
Yeah, I was using actually Macromedia Fireworks for those.
Oh, Fireworks!
Yeah, I'm sure you remember that shit.
I remember Fireworks, yeah. And then they got acquired by Adobe, right?
Yeah. No, I was using Macromedia Fireworks for the longest time because it's like, again, I came up like kind of through web design, actually, more like learning design. And so I was using that for a super long time. And I was making videos and stuff and like weird abstract stuff, like just before there was any sort of like use for it. And so
you never were a Lightwave or a Maya person? Like, you never got into those?
No, I didn't know any 3D at that time. I had never screwed with that. And that's where you see with the everydays that I started 3D after the first year of drawing.
Right.
So I did drawing and I was doing like little like animations or like After Effects and stuff like that, little like compositing animations, 2D stuff. And then after the first year of drawings, I wanted to learn 3D. I'd never known any sort of like 3D program. And so I was like, okay, well, what if I use this, you know, everyday's project to sort of teach myself 3D?
Yet there was no YouTube, so you're not watching tutorials. Are you cracking
some
like,
tutorials,
books?
But you had to really sort of like hunt around forums and shit. And yeah, I think I've got like a very old fucking like Cinema 4D 10 book that I got from
nice.
In 2000, you know, 8 or 7, whatever that was.
Those aisles were fun though. You go down those aisles and you're like, okay, what new books are there? You know?
Like, yeah, you had all those, what were those? O'Reilly?
O'Reilly with all the animals and shit on them.
I feel like we should do something with that. Somebody needs to bring that. Those would be freaking sweet NFTs. Those
would be sweet.
Those would be fucking sweet NFTs.
Well, especially with your twist on them. You got to take some of those old characters, old books, and
that would be so dope. Like, think about like animating those characters and
like the old assembly books and C++ books, and like just taking and animating those characters.
People would fuck with that. Like programmers, those fucking like, what was the C++ book or the JavaScript book or Java? Somebody will want to fucking own that because they've spent hours in that fucking book. Hours,
oh, for sure.
Hours. Like, that would be a fucking sweet NFT, I feel like, that would, like, really speak to the, like, programming community.
So how are you paying the bills when you first started doing this stuff? Did you have a day job doing other things?
Yeah, so right out of school, again, with, like, computer science, it was like, okay, I don't want to program. But what if I did? And I kind of like was like, okay, I'm just going to get through this degree or whatever and just kind of, you know, then do my own thing or try and do something more like art. So I was like, well, what if I did web design? Because I, you know, I've got the like, and I was super interested in websites too. I got the like design stuff or the like art stuff, and I've got the like computer science degree or whatever. And so I just went and worked for like a very small company in like Wisconsin, in Appleton. And so I worked there for like 10, 12 years. And I was like super good friends with all the like people, and like it was very fun, like laid back, like super easy. And like during that whole time, I kept doing all the like people stuff and like growing that sort of like, you know, thing, and kind of like the job was very easy. And so I just had like a couple like 2 hours of you know, work at work, and then I would just spend all the rest of the day just like doing 3D stuff and like just doing whatever the hell I want. And so I like through that time taught myself like 3D and like stuff like that. Then I started releasing VJ clips, these like short little like abstract clips. And those got very, very popular very quick. And then people started like approaching me and being like, oh, do you want to do like custom concert visuals? Like for me, like I saw the like free clips.
So popular in what way? Like, well, how did you distribute them? Like, were you checking Google Analytics and all one day you were like, holy shit, there's 10,000 people that view these or?
No, I wasn't looking at the analytics. So I started releasing these clips and like I kind of on Vimeo, which is also sort of now rest in peace. Still there, but I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. But so I was releasing them on Vimeo and people could just download the like full quality version or whatever. And so I started reaching out to like VJs and like people who are like, you know, DJs, the people in charge of the visuals, and been like, here you go. These are Creative Commons. Knock yourself out. And so that was in 2010, I believe. And 1 year after that, in 2011, my family and I will never forget this. My family and I happened to be, my wife and my brother, his wife, were on vacation in Macau. And we're like, oh, let's go to like a nightclub and shit. And so we're like, okay, we're going to go to the Hard Rock Cafe Macau or whatever. And so we walk up to it and project it on the outside of it. Was like the fucking clips, and I'd never seen them, and always kind of in the back of my head, like, oh, one day if I see those clips, like, that'll be super cool. Like, I'm picturing this like 10 to 20 years from now.
Yeah.
And so this is a year after I started releasing them, and it was like, oh my god, there's the fucking clips. They're using the clips. What the fuck? We're on the other side of the world. Like, what are the chances of this? Like, this is insane. And then I went like back home that summer and I went to like Lollapalooza and like a couple other shows and said, oh, okay. And there's a lot of people using these clips. These clips are being used a lot. And so like in that sort of like world, the like VJ world, like the clips are now so popular that it's almost like cheating. It's like, you're just using people clips. Like anybody can use those clips. They're not cool because they're so like used. So I released like,
a series.
I kept releasing them, obviously. I don't release as many now just because I'm not quite as interested as in like that style or whatever. But I released them for about probably 7 to 8 years and they became, you know, even more popular. That was after 1 year. They were like already quite popular. But
so were you charging for these? Were the production companies coming to you and saying like one of actually?
No, they were. I was just releasing them under Creative Commons completely free. Anybody can use them for, you know, any sort of commercial projects. So, you know, DJ Khaled and fucking all kinds of people. Like, there's tons of videos of people. People count, oh, I saw your clips behind, blah, blah, blah. But what they were is really just sort of like, or how I saw them, this wasn't initially my thought. I was just like, well, I'm making these clips. I love making them. I tried VJing a couple times and it was like, okay, this is stupid. Like, I suck at this. It's not fun. But I love making the clips. So if somebody else can use them, great. I'm still going to fucking make them. But then it like that brought me in a bunch of like really good sort of like concert visuals. So I've done concert visuals for, you know, Justin Bieber and Lady Gaga and blah, blah, blah. And the last couple Super Bowls and like a bunch of like good shows. So they were kind of like really just like a marketing tool at that point, I realized. Again, that was not my intention. I just kind of like stumbled into that.
Do you think people were considering, were you starting to make the switch from to an artist at that point where people still, they were like, oh, he's a production guy?
100%. Because at the end of the day, I mean, I draw the distinction between an artist and a designer. Quite simply, everybody's got, I'm an artist, whatever. But I draw the distinction between if you are a designer, you're just doing, you know, here's the problem. Paint me the pretty picture. We solved the problem. Here's the money. Versus an artist is just like, I'm just going to do whatever the fuck I want. Does anybody want to buy this? Yeah. Anybody want this? So that I was not making any money like that, and no digital artist was. No digital artist was making any significant amount of money.
Well, there was like DeviantArt, right?
There's DeviantArt, but DeviantArt is really just like a Instagram.
They were like selling T-shirts or stuff of prints
like that. that. And I could sold prints, but it was very little money. People really were not that interested in it. It was like, you know, I was making maybe 10% of my income from prints. Maybe, I don't even think that, maybe 5% of my income. Because again, I wasn't pushing them that hard. Nobody seemed that interested. You're selling them for $25. It's kind of a big pain in the ass. Like,
yeah,
the whole thing is like, eh, you can, but.
When was the first time you actually thought to yourself, like, this is working? I'm like, I'm a legit artist. Like, this is actually going to be my career.
I was making money from digital art, but just as a designer. And so it was like, oh, I'm, and I was making good money too. I mean, that's the thing. I'm working on, you know, stuff. And then I had things like the Louis Vuitton collab and stuff like that. So I was getting really good, like, client jobs or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I was, saw a lot of value to making this stuff just as a promotional tool for me as a, like, designer. And so I was one of the, you know, by the time the NFT thing, again, which is just like 5 months ago, 6 months ago or whatever at this point, I was a very, very popular designer. Like, I was honestly one of the, like, most popular designers in the world. Like, I had almost 2 million followers on Instagram, which, you know, is quite a lot in sort of the art world or whatever. And so it sort of, but again, I was a designer. Like, I wasn't just selling straight up, like, art or whatever. And so really, right, the first time, like, as an artist was the first NFT drop that I did, which was just like October last year, where the first time it was sort of like, okay, I'm being sold, or I'm making money now, like, significant amounts of money as a, like, artist or whatever. I just made something and people just bought it. Like,
who was the first one that told you about NFTs?
So a bunch of people kept bugging me about, oh, you got to check out this NFT thing. You got to check out this NFT thing. Because I think people know that it's like, okay, well, he will be very popular in this space, because it's really like, that's the other part about it that is very, like, I feel super, you kind of had all these crypto people sort of like very used to speculating. Because to make money in crypto, there was honestly some level of speculation. You had to get in pretty early where it was like, well, could really go either way, to be quite honest. It went right one way, but it could have just as easily gone.
Oh, it was gambling back then, no doubt.
Okay, what are we doing here? Let's freaking buy some freaking shit coins here. Like, yeah. you were rolling the dice. And so those people started like, I'm going to speculate on exactly what I make, like literally exactly what I make, like my sort of niche in like art or whatever. And so it was like, okay, like, you know, and I mean, I guess it's not a huge niche. It's sort of, you know, digital art, but specifically they were the kind of digital art that I make too.
Right.
So, you know, people kept sort of bugging me. And when I looked at it, it was just like, oh my God, like what the fuck is going on here? Like, this is crazy as shit. Like, like, to be quite honest, like, it never even occurred to me. Like, this wasn't, like, even on my radar. I don't know, like, I didn't know if anybody else was on anybody's radar.
Were you collecting, like, did you at least hold any Bitcoin at that point? Or did you know anything about Ethereum, or?
I knew of it, again, because of the, like, computer science background. Like, I knew of it quite early, and I was like, what the fuck? This is fucking insane. Like, this dude, like, wrote a fucking album. Nobody knows who the fuck he is. Just, here's this later. And let's say, like, what the fuck is, that's like crazy. That's like science fiction shit. Like, that's a whole fucking major. And then you had the Silk Road thing. And that was just like, what the fuck? Like, that was another level of, like, when I read that article about what that dude did and like fucking putting hits on people. And
did you ever go on the Silk Road?
I never went on it, dude. I never installed Tor, did you?
Oh, yeah, I did.
I bought tons of shit.
No, I wanted to go on there. There was, like, people were selling, like, rocket launchers and shit. Like, there was all kinds of stuff. I mean, I don't know if it was real, but it was listed on there, you know? So
they had tons of, like, drugs and shit?
Oh, yeah. There was, like, weed and coke and MDMA and all that stuff. It's weird that they were selling weed now. Like, when I think about it, I'm just like, that's
cute. That's cute. Exactly. That's adorable. So yeah, I was definitely aware of all that stuff. And I had bought a little Ethereum, just a very tiny amount, in 2017 when, like, everybody else, you know, freaked out and bought it. And so saw it go up, saw it go down, never really thought about it, just kinda like, you know, wasn't really following crypto at all. And then, you know, in October, September or whatever, actually it was in October of last year, you know, finally I started looking and I was like, what the fuck? Like, you're selling, these people are selling video files? Like, you're selling a fucking MP4, selling a fucking JPEG, and you're, people are paying tens of thousands of dollars for that? Like, at that time, somebody paying like $5,000 for it was like, what the fuck? Yeah. Like, this is insane. Like,
had you heard of CryptoPunks at this point?
Because
that was the very, very first one that came out a few years ago.
Pretty, I don't think I had heard of CryptoPunks. I had heard of CryptoKitties, I believe, the one that sold for like $100,000, but I didn't know that much about it. I knew very, very little. I do not think I knew of CryptoPunks at that time. And I learned, you know, so from there, finally, when I kind of like caught wind of like what was going on here, I was like, oh my God. And it was just down the fucking rabbit hole. Just like, okay, reaching out to like artists, creators, platform people, collectors, who the fuck, like trying just anybody to jump on a fucking Zoom with me, like, what the fuck is going on here?
What? So how did you press your first one? Like, where did you go? What platform was it on?
So immediately dove the fuck in. And so the one of the first people I talked to was at Nifty Gateway, and sort of this was about 2 weeks before the election, and they were talking about how these things could change. They could change state or whatever. I was like, oh shit, like what if we did something based on like the election? Like that would change if Trump won or if Biden won or whatever. And they're like, oh, let's do that. I'm like, wait, nobody's done that? They're like, yeah, nobody's done that. I'm like, what? What? I'm like, it just like, it seemed like there's a lot of, and it still does, seems like there's a lot of low hanging fruit. Like, it's like, just think about that O'Reilly thing. Like, that would be freaking sweet. I get almost guaranteed like shit tons of programmers. If you did it right and did it thoughtfully and did it in a like, you know.
And all those programmers are early Bitcoiners. They'd be your best customers. Yeah.
That's fucking crazy shit. I would fucking love something like that. And I didn't even read those books that much, but I would see value in like owning that.
Yeah, for sure.
So I just feel like there's still like so much like low hanging fruit. So the first thing with Nifty, it was like, oh, we should do this like thing based on the election. I'm like, oh yeah, let's do it. So then it was like, okay, well, fuck, the election's in 2 weeks. Like, we gotta fucking do this thing. So it kind of forced me to like, you know, sort of get right into it. And so the first drop that I did had like that piece and like a couple other pieces. And then from there, we kind of, you know, just sort of went from there.
What did the first one sell for?
So the first one had an edition of 100 for $1. And so I kind of knew that those would be worth more than a dollar. I thought maybe they'd be worth like $100 a piece. And so they instantly sold out, crashed the fucking site. And then within an hour, they were selling for $1,000 each. And it was like, what the fuck? Like, this fucking insane. Like, this is crazy. And then by the end of the night, one had sold for $6,000. And it was like, what the fuck is going on? This is like fucking insane. These were a dollar 4 hours ago. Like, and now people just flipped them for fucking $6,000. Like, that.
Did you keep any of them? Did you keep like the first one?
Kept nothing. No, it's just like, I'm just doing this and just kind of like give back to the community and just sort of like, it's a fun experiment. And again, nobody'd ever done that. And so it was like, you know, I just wanted to like see, we'll see what happens from this. You know, it doesn't really cost me anything. So it's like, you know, I made a video. You want this? It's 1 of 100. Like, here you go. So that was like super cool. And then the next day there was 2 auctions and each one sold for 66,000.
Oh my God.
So that was again, 66,000. It was like, oh my God, what the fuck? Like, this is fucking just like insane. And so I was like, okay, well, this is the fucking thing. Like, I'm done taking any client work. Like, this is what I'm fucking doing from now on. Until this fucking thing, like, goes away, this is the fucking thing.
Yeah.
Pretty quickly, I, like, you know, whittled down the, like, client work that I still had going or whatever and just, like, focused all my attention on the, like, you know, NFT stuff.
So when you were creating this, you know, you have these 13 years of these everydays that you're creating, did you take those and turn those into NFTs, or what was the, or was it just only new creations? Oh, I'm kind of confused on that piece.
Yeah, the first drop was all new stuff. It was all like new creations just for the thing. And so then the second drop was like, okay, well, obviously these everydays are like the biggest thing that I'm kind of like known for or whatever. Like, how can I take those? And they, in retrospect, again, very lucky, they literally seem like they're pretty much perfectly made for like collecting. Like, they're literally numbered already. Like, it's, they couldn't be more made for collecting, actually. And they come out at like a very steady rate or whatever. So it was like, okay, I want to do this though in a way that kind of like makes it feel like it's like a thing instead of just like, here's this thing I did 2 years ago. And so one of the questions that I got from a lot of people was, why would I buy this? Like, why would I buy something I could just get on Instagram? So it's like, okay, well, that's a fair thing. And so it was like, how can I solve that sort of thing? Why, what the fuck are you buying? And why the fuck would I pay money for something I could just see on Instagram? So the first thing was like, okay, I want to make it look like just the image itself, clearly like a collectible. So it clearly looks like that is not what you see on Instagram. It like sort of zooms in on the pictures. It shows details like better than you could see. It's got a bunch of like data about like wanting to make it look very clearly like a collectible or whatever.
So that was the Infinite Objects, right? That created those frames.
I had one of these Infinite Object screens like from earlier in the year, pre-COVID. I had a bunch of like gallery shows planned. Had a fucking giant fucking 50-foot canvases made of the first 12 years of Everydays. And a bunch of fucking shows planned all over the country, whatever. Everything got canceled. And so I had one of these things sitting on my, like, I had it for, like, you know, 8 months or whatever. And then after that first drop, I was like, oh, what if I fucking gave these out as, like, the fucking physical and, like, you know, put, like, a nice, like, backplate and, like, made, like, a like, nice sort of, like, box for people to have, like, a nice, like, you know, sort of unboxing thing where they can get something that feels like kind of like a very sort of like premium, so cool. Nice, yeah. Like electronics thing that it's like, okay, the NFT is sweet, but like, what if you could do more like on top of that to make the experience even like cooler beyond the like NFT or whatever? And then it also answers the question, what the fuck are you buying? It's like, well, you're buying this. You don't even need to worry about the other shit.
Right.
It will have, it, trust me, it has value, but you can just, you're buying this.
So when people are buying them, are they splitting them up? So they're saying, I'm going to keep the frame for myself, have it here, and I'll sell the NFT to someone else.
That's been a very sort of, I wanted to sort of prevent that. That was a big thing that it's like, I don't want people to do that. Because people had paired physicals in the past, but they were very separate. And so that's why I put sort of this like QR code, and it goes to the site and like shows who owns this piece. So I wanted it to feel very, very connected. So I can't stop people from doing that. Obviously, that's literally impossible. But yeah. I wanted to make it so that if you did that, you're financially disincentivized from doing that. You can't stop somebody from just, oh, here's a baseball card. I'm just going to cut it in half. Look, anybody want this piece and this piece? Well, you can do that, but it's fucking stupid as hell. And like, you certainly did not make it more valuable. So that's what I wanted to try and make this like. You can split up the physical and the thing, but you're definitely not going to unlock more value like that. Like, it's going to be stupid to do that. So that was the thing. But yeah, people could, you know, sort of buy the thing and get the thing. And so, but the other sort of side of that is, and that's where I think people are not, like, recognize this. They're so focused on, well, you're getting nothing. It's just virtual. It's like, well, you could also look at it as like, okay, if you own the NFT, and something happens to this, the screen dies, the fucking, right, your kid breaks it, but you still own the NFT, I can issue you another one of these because this is actually quite cheap.
Right.
The artwork, very expensive. This is fucking cheap as hell. Like, I can definitely, like, if you've paid $100,000 for the artwork, I could probably send you another one of these, like, $500, like, things to, like, sort of, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it's really cool. It's in that it's you can basically transport it anywhere you want in real time, right? Like, I could walk into a different house and then instantly move it over to a new device, right?
And so that's the thing, that it's one of these things where I like this form factor because it's one of these things where you can have, you know, a bunch of them out. You could sort of like have a collection, and you know how you go into like, you know, like office buildings and stuff, and you see people with all their like vinyl figures and stuff on their toys, like, I can very easily see a future where you've got, here's all my NFTs. You've got like a bunch of little screens, like here's your like video collection or whatever, sort of like sitting out too. And so that's where I think this form factor is really cool and like super interesting and makes like a lot of sense for like collecting. It's not something, okay, I'm going to hang this on the fucking wall and the cord's hanging down and it looks like shit. And like, it's just kind of, I think this form factor, I think, is very interesting, and there's a lot of room to play there and bring these things, because at the end of the day, you're gonna view an NFT in the real world somehow. Like, we're not into the fucking, we're not jacked into the goddamn matrix yet. We're not sitting in the goo freaking.
Elon's working on that.
Elon's working on it. He's working. He'll get there. He'll get there, that son of a bitch. But it's one of those things where we're not there yet. So you're still viewing it in the real world. So that can just be on a computer screen, on a whatever website.
Do you see this as like imagine the future where, or do you imagine a future where if I walk into a bar, I sit down at my table, my NFT collection displays behind me in some way. I can walk by, see other people's NFTs.
You're saying displays behind you how? Like in
meaning that it knows that I have my phone on me, and I've authorized that with the table, and then behind me, like the beach. Yeah, or if I walk up to a piece of art in a gallery, I can literally walk out with it.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, you could literally just like, I mean, think if these were behind in like a little case. You walk up, you fucking scan, it's got a QR code there, right there on your phone. You buy the fucking art. Can you come grab that out of the case for me? Boom.
Yeah, or don't even take the frame. You could just take out your phone and then put it on your own frame when you get back home.
That too, like you could do that. You could do, I mean, there's so many different ways to like sort of like do this. I think there will be both. I think there will be some pieces of art where you buy and get your own frame because it's a very bespoke, interesting thing. But
signed,
I think
by
people,
the artist kind of thing,
yeah. And I think it will be like, okay, well, this is very specific to this exact artwork or whatever. And then I think there will also be like just sort of, you know, more quote unquote generic frames where it's just like this plays a bunch of your like NFTs or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think people will have both. And so, yeah, I think that idea you had, like that would be super fucking cool. That it's like, boom, then you walk by and you saw somebody with like really expensive piece of art. It's like, oh, there's that fuck. What the fuck? He's got one of those. Like, yeah, that's
because it's to buy.
Well, it's just different like ways of sort of like, you know, kind of like displaying this stuff and sort of like, you know, it's just a different like flex, to be quite honest. Like that's a big piece of it. It's like, okay, showing that you have these things, just like we do with a million other things, like a fucking purse, like you look at like a fucking Louis Vuitton purse, like,
yeah, sports cars, everything, watches.
Sports cars are a little different to me because it's like, okay, well, that actually took like a huge amount of time to like actually build. But like there's a bunch of things that we place value on that it's like, well, it didn't really take that much more time to build than an equivalent. Like again, a Louis Vuitton handbag. It's sort of like, well, it's a nice handbag, but it's really like not that different from like a regular handbag. We put a lot of like status on it.
In theory, you could write into a smart contract and say, unveil this piece of art over time. So it does take 10 years for it to unveil or it changes. What are your thoughts on that more dynamically shifting? I mean, you mentioned it earlier. Is that a path you're going to go down?
That's another path that I have not thought that much about, but every time I do think about it, it's like, oh, shit, that will be freaking sweet. So cool. Like, yeah, exactly what you're saying. Like, think if you had a bunch of a piece that had like a bunch of videos associated with it. And just like you were saying, it unveiled over time. All of the URLs for the like video were like encoded. I'm assuming you could do this. I don't know that you could, but I think you could. All of the URLs to these videos were encoded and you couldn't see them until they like actually displayed, you know, 3 years in the future, two years in the future.
Cool.
That'd be freaking sweet as shit. I don't know that anybody's done that.
Because you have no idea what you're buying at that point, right?
Nobody's fucking done, probably.
Yeah, I mean, there's the problem with Ethereum is that it's completely transparent code and you can go look at the source, but there are other chains that are starting to...
That's what I'm saying. What if the source was encrypted? Could you do that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's an engineer that could figure this out.
Yeah, it's all you can see the source. But what if the actual URL to where it's pointed was encrypted and hidden, and so that piece of it you couldn't see? It was fucking hashed or something, and that hash would only decode after a certain amount of time. So you could see there's all these video files that it's going to change to, but you can't see what those video files are. That, I think, could be like super, super interesting.
Yeah, or you could tie it to real world events, like you said, with the outcome of the election. Like, it could display different things. It could be outcome of anything, right?
The outcome of, you know, what's the temperature, the average, like global warming, something like that. It could be, there's a million different things, like real world sort of data sources that it's like, and the interesting thing about that too, the same with the election piece is, then it's, you're setting up these conditions, and then it's like, it's out of my hands. Like, the artwork is
it's cemented in the blockchain.
Yeah, it's a reflection of literally life. And like that, to me, like that is super interesting and something that just like, that was not a thing before.
Like, yeah. Creatively, that must be just like the most exciting thing to think about tackling next.
Every day, I feel like it's just like this overload of like inspiring, like, oh shit, you could do this with it. Yeah. And then it's like, oh fuck, if you combined it with that thing. Like, and like that's been like super inspiring and interesting is like, you know, hearing people, like I've talked to, like, you know, Mark Cuban and shit. And, you know, it's like, oh, was this what it was like at the beginning of the internet? He's like, this is exactly what it was like.
That's awesome. He's a huge NFT guy. That's so cool,
like,
that he's
super
into it.
Jacked about it. And so it was like, you know, we kind of connected or whatever. And it was just like, you know, he sees the light. Oh, shit, this is going to be like fucking massive. Because what I think people are not, it seems really complicated, but it's actually super fucking simple. Literally just proving ownership. Like, yeah. That's it. And it's like, again, like, what is the fucking internet? Literally a bunch of blank pages. Is yeah. Literally just a bunch of fucking blank pages at its core that you can connect and fucking build anything on top of. And I think you're going to be able to build so much on top of the idea of just owning something that it's like a bazillion uses.
Have you chatted with Elon on the phone yet?
I have not talked to Elon. I have.
So you just spar with him over Twitter.
I'm still not sure he actually knows it. But we'll see. I'm going to try and get to him.
He must have seen some of the stuff you've done with him, right?
He's liked a couple things and responded a couple of times. But I mean, that's the thing. He seems like a pretty busy guy. He's got a couple of more important things than whatever some jackass fucking drew some pee-pee pictures of him that day.
I'd love to talk about a couple of your specific pieces. Early on,
do it.
You have pictures of people. Like actual pictures. Who are those people?
So the pictures of the people in the drawings, you're saying?
No, actually, like real photos of people.
Okay, so over the time, I did like a bunch of, like, I was sort of splitting it up by years. That it's like, okay, this is the first round. And if you go to my website, you can kind of see how they're like broken up like that. So this is like the tool that I want to focus on. Obviously, the first year was drawing, and then it was like Cinema 4D, a like 3D program. And in 2010, I believe, I wanted to learn how to use a like digital SLR. I didn't know anything about lenses and focal length and ISO and blah, blah, blah. And I was getting married at the time too. And so it was like, we could hire a photographer. I could just buy a fucking, you know, Canon 7D and figure out how to use it and win-win, blah, blah, blah. So those photos are just friends and fucking family and just, okay, here's a kid, take a picture of, you know, friends' kids or whatever. Like, you know, it was just like to learn how to use a, like, you know, digital SLR. So something obviously more complicated than just like the like cell phone camera or whatever, and learn how to grade pictures and sort of that whole sort of like photography process. So I did that for about 8 months. That was also sort of like, you know, I started in May, and I wanted to sort of have each year be starting, you know, at the first January or whatever. So I did that for 8 months to sort of like get it on track with that. But yeah, there's a bunch of, so there's drawing, there's photography, there's like vector stuff in like Adobe Illustrator. I did a year of that. Then the most, the rest of it is like 3D stuff.
And then there's some pretty serious stuff as well. I mean, you did a tribute to George Floyd. You did one called Listen, which I thought was just beautiful. Can you tell me about the Listen where everyone's sitting around in that circle?
Things that I'm doing now, the like tools have gotten to a point, and I'm, you know, sort of have a workflow down that allows me to sort of work very quickly and produce pieces that seem like they, you know, potentially could take hours upon hours or days or whatever. And I could put them together in like, you know, an hour, 2 hours or whatever. And so I can sort of, because of that, and because I'm doing each one that day, like I'm not banking these up. They're done today. Today I will do one in the next 9 hours of something. I have no fucking clue, whatever. And so during the George Floyd thing, like, you know, they've become more sort of like political and sort of like, you know, I'm a big sort of like news junkie. See, I've got, you know, a bunch of TVs here, like I have the news on constantly behind me on mute. And so that's another thing I'm very interested in. So when things like that were happening last summer, obviously I was, you know, sort of very fucking affected by it as everybody else was.
Yeah.
And so that stuff is just honestly like a lot of it is just sometimes it's just whatever I'm fucking thinking about this day. Like it felt it's one of these things where it's almost like a journal now in a sense, but it's like a diary of the life of my life and of like the world too. And so it's like, okay, well, I have to like fucking, it feels stupid, like, and weird. Like, well, here's a picture of Donkey Kong fucking or whatever. It's like, what the fuck? It's like, that's not where my fucking head was those days. Like, you know,
yeah.
So it's kind of like, it seemed like, how could I not like comment on it? That's all I thought about that day. Like, just like everybody else. Like, it's just like, what the fuck is going on? You know, the riots and stuff. And it was just like, this is fucking serious shit. Like,
yeah.
this was, I mean, I think people have already kind of forgotten that it's like, we had like fucking riots in like every fucking city in the country for like 10 days or some shit. Like, every fucking night. Like, it was some pretty like, and there was a moment there.
Well, especially for someone that's like, into news, like my wife's super into news, and like it just like drains you watching that.
It is just like, yeah, it is definitely, I think it's a way to like process, and I'm pretty good about stepping back and turning it off. I've got a pretty high threshold for like, you know, the news, which is unfortunately mostly a lot of fucking horrific shit.
Yeah.
You know, at times, but yeah, it's definitely helps to feel like I have that sort of like outlet to kind of like, I don't know. I did fucking something. I kind of.
It's cool to see that you. Yeah, I was gonna say like you have the very more serious political stuff, and then you have the dick milking factory.
Okay, come on, guy. You had to go there.
Dude, the dick. We got to talk about the dick milking factory. I want to know. I want to know what's going on there, because I was examining it, and in the background, it's a Hot Pockets factory.
God damn it, I'm going to get sued by Hot Pockets, so... Hot Pockets v. Beeple, that's going to go on... Oh, that's going all the way to the Supreme Court, dude. That one's going to the fucking Supreme Court. The thing with Hot Pockets, and if you look at my Instagram, I have a story kind of explaining what happened. So, do you know Lil Nas X?
Yes.
So Lil Nas X came to me when this was 2 summers ago or whatever, and the song was all crazy. And they were like, oh, we've got his new song, Panini, coming out. And they're like, well, can you make, like, a poster for it? And I was like, okay, well, yeah, that'd be sweet, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, what's the budget? Well, $500. It's like, go fuck yourself. I'm not fucking doing that for $500. Go fuck yourself. Like, again, this is, like, it's pretty high-paid, like, fucking designer. And it's like, shut the fuck up. This is like, you know, this, every time you turn on the radio, this is all you fucking hear is this song. Like, shut up. So it's like, I'm just going to do whatever the fuck I want. You post it. I'm just going to do whatever the hell I want.
Yeah.
So I did this picture of him, like, beating the shit out of, like, bunch of, like, paninis. Something about, like, oh, I should tag Hot Pockets in this. And then I was like, well, what if I was, like, kind of like an influencer? But I'm like, what if somebody was, like, a reverse influencer? And that they were posting horrific pictures and tagging brands in them. Kind of like the mafia, and you would have to pay them for protection from this artist who keeps posting fucking their logo in horrible, horrific pictures they don't want to be associated right. with until you fucking pay them to stop doing that. And so you can see, watch that Instagram story. You can see this play out in my fucking thing of this over like a day. And I started posting all this like horrible shit and putting the Hot Pockets logo. So that Hot Pockets logo has been in like, I don't know, probably like 100, maybe 200 everydays, like the horrific everydays. You'll find a little Hot Pockets logo in there. So they haven't paid me to stop yet. So we'll see.
That's amazing. So what's the next for you? Where do you take it from here?
Let's just say we got a lot of fire, because again, like, there's so many, like, there's just so many possibilities with this stuff that I see, that it's like, you know, it just feels like there's just a massive amount of possibilities for where NFTs can do, what they can go, how it can be applied to like what I do. So the next sort of like big thing I have is the like spring collection, which moving forward, I'm going to do like a fall collection and like a spring collection, which are like bigger sort of like releases or whatever. So that's the next thing I have, coming up in like a month or so. But yeah.
How do you ensure that people like the average, well, I shouldn't say the average consumer, but like, obviously you could drop anything now and it's going for hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars. Like, how does someone get involved with, you know, $5,000? Is that possible anymore? Or is that just like,
that's literally impossible. It's literally impossible.
Like, unless you did a random giveaway, right? That's the only way you could do it, is like
giveaways. And I've still done those, and I just did one like probably a week ago, and it was an edition of 7, and immediately people were like, I just got fucking, like, you know, and it was just a raffle basically. Here's this one every day, you know, instead of it being an edition of 1 and it comes with a physical or whatever, and it's an edition of 7. There will be 7 different ones. So people immediately who won these were like, I just immediately was offered $350,000. Like,
oh, I saw that tweet from you. Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, obviously that's sort of expected at this point just with what's happened or whatever, but it's still just like, what the fuck is, like, I honestly, if you have less than $100,000, there's nothing you can buy.
Yeah.
Like, just like me even saying that is like, the fuck, because prior to last October, I had never sold a print. I had never sold a piece of my artwork for more than $100. Wow. $100. I had never sold a thing. Because it was in this format that people were just kind of like, eh, piece of paper, cool. And there was no way to prove ownership. There was no way, like, people just weren't looking at it as like real art. It was just like digital art.
Well, even now, though, those prints must be going for a decent amount, right?
Honestly, I don't even know. I think it was going to shut that Society 6. Like, I just have, like, a fucking Society 6. Like, I'm pretty sure you could still get, like, a Beeple print for, like, from Society 6 for, like, $20 or some shit. Like, I mean,
fantastic. I'm going there right after this. You might see an order from Kevin Rose for 25 prints.
Send me your address. I'll send you a bunch of prints. Definitely, you know, very weird to think. And to be honest, I don't know how I would possibly make it at $5,000. I mean, maybe the value of this shit. And again, I do believe this is, we're somewhere in a bubble here, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear that. They would rather have me just rah, rah, boom, boom. Everything's going to, like, I'm not sure about that. I think there's certain things where I'm seeing where it's like, eh.
But the underlying tech, obviously, is here to stay. I mean, this is the new creative medium.
Again, I was very worried about that. And then I talked to Gary Vee, and he's like, dude, it's going to be just like the internet. There will be a bubble. It's not going to wipe out the internet. It's just going to wipe out the crap. And so he's like, you'll be fine. I was like, oh, maybe I will be fine.
Yeah, he's right.
And so it was just like, you know, I think as long as you're putting time and value and sort of like really trying to like, okay, how can I make this the best fucking like product or whatever? Like, I think you'll be like fine or whatever. But I mean, again, if I wanted to release something that was like $5,000, I would have to release it. It's such a massive volume at this point that it's like, I don't.
Or anonymously, and then later claim ownership.
Anonymously, sure. And that's the thing that it's sort of, to me, I feel very lucky in that I can just keep making work because it's like I'm not tokenizing all this. Like, it hasn't stopped me from like making work. You can take it for free, and you want to fucking print it out? Print it out, and I don't give a shit. I'm not going to fight. Well, you fucking. No, I've always been like that. Like, I've always been, there's a bunch of project files on my website of like all the movies that I made. You can download the entire fucking movie, all the like project files. And I've always tried to give away as much as I can, even with, you know, now I'm just giving away artwork or whatever, just because it's sort of like, I don't know. It doesn't hurt you. Like, that's what I've never understood. Like, people, if some kid in India wants to like take my picture and like fucking put it on a t-shirt and like that can help him sell a fucking t-shirt, like, no. It's like, what the fuck? Don't do that. Like, it's just kind of like, what the fuck are you talking about? And if that's your view, like, and if that's your sort of like thing, like, I don't think you're helping yourself. It's like, that kid is definitely no threat to you. Like, it's not. So I've always just been like, anybody who wants to take this stuff, like, please take it.
Now, people are taking your face and they're creating art around it and launching NFTs of you that are selling for thousands of dollars. Thoughts on that?
That is super weird too, to be honest. That is super weird. But it's like, it is super funny too, because it's like, some of it's like really good too. A lot of it is kind of like, well, that's quite weird. But that entire thing is just like also like super, super weird. Like the entire thing is just very bizarre. It's very.
Are there any other NFT artists that you respect, that you like?
There's tons of people. Because again, and that's what I think people don't recognize with this. And like with me too, that it's like, well, this just came out of nowhere. It's like, nah, well, I kind of been creating this for like fucking 20 years.
Who are some of your favorites? What are some of your favorite projects?
Some of the people who I'm excited to sort of like get more attention are people like Joshua Davis. Joshua Davis is somebody that like when I was coming up in like, you know, early 2000s, like fucking action script, generative, you know, flash art and making just like amazing stuff where you would look at it now and be like, oh yeah, this looks like it was made 2 weeks ago. It's like, no, that was made 20 years ago. Like, wow. That's how fucking like ahead of its, you know, time it was.
The Shockwave days.
Shockwave, yeah. He was making like these massive fucking prints that was all like just generated with like code or whatever, like sort of making these crazy like layering stuff and, you know, adding stuff and stuff all through like, you know, processing code or whatever. So I think people like that, I would like to see them, you know, sort of get more of a platform, especially because it shows that this is not something that just started with NFTs. Like digital art has been made for the last 20 years. There was just no way to collect it. Right. It was just, there was no way to own it in like a way that made sense to people and a way that just worked. And so now with that, yeah. I hope there's really a sort of like going back and looking like, okay, what is the history of like digital art and like, you know, what has been going on for the last 20 years that, you know, the traditional art scene and the sort of like broader art scene have kind of ignored, because again, nothing against them, there was no way to collect it. So it's like, well, there was nothing really to sort of, you know, they weren't looking at it in that light or whatever. But
have you seen the art block stuff where they're doing the generative art on there where you're writing code and the code actually gets submitted into Ethereum and that
recreates the art?
That stuff's
cool.
Nuts.
Wait, yeah. So what is it doing? How does it work?
So essentially, there's a JavaScript developers that will write a piece, an algorithm.
Okay.
And they don't know what it's going to generate. I mean, they generally know a sense because they've run it a few times what they're going to look like. But the person minting it, when they click the button to mint it, that's when it actually pulls in the timestamp and like chops it right there and creates something new and saves it. So when you receive your art, it's one of one and it's unique and it was generated in the moment.
Sweet idea. That is a really cool. Sweet idea. So wait, what do the artwork, what does it kind of generally look like?
Oh, all the different types of things. Yeah, it's artblocks.io.
Blocks?
That's the site that sells them. Yeah, there's all the generative art on there.
That's fucking sweet. That is a great idea. Like that, and that's the thing. There's so many things like that that like people are going to be able to make really cool like things, especially with you kids when you combine it with code. The sky's the limit.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, Beeple, Mike, thank you so much.
Thank you for fucking having me on. It was super good to fucking chat. And like, you know, obviously I've been a huge fan for many, many years here. So it was super great to connect and like, you know, yeah, appreciate the opportunity.
If you ever decide to sell the dick milking, keep me in mind.
Just stay tuned, buddy. Stay tuned. Let's just say, save your ear. Save your ear. That one might be coming. Coming soon.
All right, that's it for this episode. Of course, you can get all the links in the show notes. Head on over to mofi.net. And if you're enjoying the show, please, at the very top of mofi.net, there's a little button that says rate the show. If you click that and give us a 5-star review, we'd really appreciate it. That's it for now. See you next time.